Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
An exploration hoax. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
Jonathan Swift's A Modest Proposal is arguably one of the most famous social and political satires in the English language. And one of the most famous lines within it is when Swift claims, quote, "a native of the land of Formosa," Formosa, now present-day Taiwan, "idiotically suggests the solution for poverty is feeding Irish babies to the upper classes." Remember that from school, maybe? Well, 10 years after Swift penned A Modest Proposal, another celebrated author, Dr. Samuel Johnson, would befriend that same Formosian mentioned in A Modest Proposal, a blonde-haired, blue-eyed man with a vague French accent and bizarre rituals, a man who captured English audiences, claiming to be the first Asian man to visit Europe. His name was George Solmaneser, and in the early 1700s, he was a superstar and a gigantic con man. In late 1702, Alexander Innes, an Anglican chaplain of a Scottish army unit stationed in the Netherlands, met a man he called a heathen, a handsome, blonde-haired, blue-eyed individual who spoke in a strange language and claimed to be from Formosa, again, modern-day Taiwan. Innes promptly converted the man to Christianity, christening him George Solmaneser, after the Assyrian king Shalmaneser V, a nice, meaty Old Testament reference. In 1703, Innes, so fascinated by Solmaneser's strange customs, which included a completely indecipherable calendar, eating raw meat spiced with cardamom, sleeping while sitting upright in a chair, and hours-long moon and sun rituals, left for London, taking his intriguing new convert with him. Innes planned to show Solmaneser off to his fellow Anglican clergymen, maybe gain some clout in the most powerful church in Europe, or, hey, maybe both. When Innes and Solmaneser touched down in London, news of the exotic foreigner with bizarre habits spread quickly, and Solmaneser was pretty instantly famous. People loved him not only because he seemed palatably and inoffensively, quote, exotic, but also because his story appealed to the idea of religion reforming, quote, inferior people, and the English people's anti-Catholic sentiment of the time. So what was his story exactly? Well, according to Solmaneser, he was just a normal Formosian Asian man abducted by malevolent Jesuits and taken to France, where he refused to become a Catholic. Then he met Innes and converted to Anglicanism. To English media outlets, Solmaneser was a star, a poster child for the right kind of colonialism. His specific religious commitment, his master of the English language, with a vague French accent that nobody questioned, he became a favorite of the Bishop of London and other highly respectable members of English society, who begged to know more. And Solmaneser gave the people what they wanted. In 1704, Solmaneser published a book called An Historical and Geographical Description of Formosa, an Island Subject to the Emperor of Japan. The book was a detailed description of Formosian customs, with charts, travel reports, diagrams, and more. According to Solmaneser, Formosa was a prosperous country with a capital city called Externetsa. The people of Formosa mostly ate snakes that they hunted with tree branches. Formosians walked around naked except for a gold or silver plate to cover their genitals. Husbands were polygamous and had a right to eat their wives should they cheat on them. If you were to be charged with murder on the island, you'd be executed by upside-down hanging and then shot full of arrows. Solmaneser also claimed the Formosians had built a gigantic temple for their high priest they called Gnotoi Bonzo, who commanded them to annually sacrifice, quote, "the hearts of 18,000 young boys under the age of 9 years on the first day of the year." Then Solmaneser explained the priests ate the boys' bodies. They used horses and camels for transport and lived underground in cute little circular houses. According to an Atlantic article by Kimbrew MacLeod, quote, "Solmaneser sounded like an anthropology major tripping on peyote." I'm not going to say I disagree. Jason, I'm going to show you some illustrations Salman Ezer created, and I just want you to give your thoughts on them and perhaps some ideas on what kind of person drew them.
I'm going to go into this with an open mind.
Yes, go in with an open mind. You know a little bit about this person that constructed these drawings. But I just want to ask, like, does this person have a command of, like, a culture? It looks like if you asked a European man from the 1700s to draw anything that wasn't European, to me, it would be, like, this very ethnocentric, like no, none of the men are wearing shirts, for example. But they're still, like, smoking, like, long pipes. The women have, like, a daisy crown. It's just, like, it
makes no
sense.
They look like superheroes.
Yeah.
A lot of capes, a lot of hats.
Yeah, cape draperies and, you know, like, the shrouds. I don't know what a burger is. One of the titles is a burger. One is a country bumpkin. One is a virgin. And one is a bride, of course. Two very different things, the virgin and the bride.
Don't ask me which one I am.
No.
You can guess, though.
Are you a Carrie?
I'm at least two out of the three.
Okay, that's good. I'm going to keep guessing. I'm going to keep ruminating on it. But clearly, this person has no fucking idea. And again, if you're someone in the 1700s in Europe, maybe you'd be like, oh, that makes sense. But it kind of looks like old drawings of, like, pilgrims from the early Americas. It's like this vague kind of ridiculous idea of what someone that is not like you would look like. This man's quote-unquote culture. But then there's the Formosan language that Salman Ezer described and graphed in obsessive and convincing detail. The Formosan alphabet had 20 letters that were written from right to left, a detail Salman Ezer probably thought was true of all Asian languages. It sounded, quote, a little Hebrew, kind of Greek, and the rest nonsense. All in all, he created a language that sounded, generally to many people, very real. Here is his translation of a Christian prayer into Formosan. Forgive my pronunciation of this language. Amy pornio danchin ornio viki gnajorhe se lori ifoder se bagalin jorhi sai dominion apo chin ornio kachin body ayan Amy katsada nada kichion toi ant nada yi ke radonye ant emi sochin brokatsky ken sai vi bagalin ke veri ke barhanian chinaania sendabe amien. The language was so impressive that German grammarians included samples of Salman Ezer's Formosan alphabet in books about language well into the 19th century, even after, well, spoiler alert, his fakery had been exposed. But for now, it was the early 18th century, and Salman Ezer's book and story were both riveting. Salman Ezer was invited to lecture on Formosan culture and language all over Europe, including a lecture before the Royal Society. Despite all of this praise, there were skeptics who questioned, well, how European Salman Ezer looked. Quote, my complexion indeed, which was very fair, Salman Ezer recalled, appeared an unanswerable objection against me. The Royal Society report on him noted that, quote, he looked like a young Dutchman. But he did have an answer. Salman Ezer told an elaborate story about how the upper classes of Formosa lived, quote, in cool shades or apartments underground, which kept their skin very light. Although some ethnic distinctions existed during this period, like the difference between Europeans and African people, more nuanced categories of race did not yet exist. According to, again, writer Kimbrew MacLeod in his Atlantic piece about Salman Ezer, quote, quote, there was simply no conceptual framework in place to ask the question, aren't you Caucasian? Another giant dissenting force of Salman Ezer's were the English Jesuits who had actually been to Taiwan on missions. They said that Salman Ezer was, in essence, delusional. They agreed that they had never heard of this language or these customs or anything Salman Ezer detailed in his public appearances or in his very bad book. But probably because of anti-Jesuit prejudice, nobody believed the Jesuits calling bullshit on Salman Ezer's strange and intense story. But eventually, some very powerful factors would unravel Salman Ezer's Formosan origin story. Mainly, time, ego, and opium. A lot of opium. We'll get to it after the break.
Hi, hello. How are you doing?
Hello, hello.
How's it going?
How's it going over there?
What's going on over there?
Oh, way out yonder?
I'm from a land far away you've never been to.
Oh, I see, I see. Tell me everything.
I'm here to thank the good people of Ghost Town for supporting, spreading the good word. We appreciate you from where I come from. The east side of Los Angeles.
Wow. What's your language like? Your culture?
I'm a burger.
You're a burger.
And a little bit of a virgin.
Oh, okay.
Now we know. Now that, we know.
What we put high upon a pedestal where I'm from are governments.
That's right.
And
that's
your true. Ghost town government is second to none.
That's true.
Especially the mayors.
I mean, they're great.
I've heard a lot about the, I guess it would be sorceress?
Hmm.
Does Ghost Town government have a sorceress?
We do now. We do now.
Known as, and this is a mysterious name, Emma Hopkins.
Hello.
You also have a town blacksmith? I'm jumping around as far as the stations here, but they're all equally cool.
Yeah, and important.
With, again, very mysterious name, Ashley Mattson.
Hello.
And the town jester. But everyone loves the jester. Uh-huh. Everyone loves comedians.
That's true.
That's something we know through time and space.
Through
everyone
time
loves
and space.
Comedians.
Highest paid, most respected.
We love them. That'd be Kelly Meehan.
Hello.
And we have the town doctor. Just prescribing any old bottle of what?
He makes house calls.
Makes house calls, has a little bag.
He doesn't even have an office. He just comes on over.
That'd be Dr. Katchozel.
Hello.
Then we have the town crier.
What did they do? What is that?
Always crying. Crying about this, crying about that, but gets everybody's attention.
Oh, okay.
Everyone heeds the word of the town crier. And that would be Matthew Clement Lurie.
Hello.
And then we have the town bad person. Not really a criminal, but not a criminal.
I mean, it's like they abide by laws, but they have a bad attitude about it.
They kind of like they lean on things with one foot up.
Oh, nice.
Maybe smoking some whatever they're smoking.
Oh, it's like a hat.
Yeah, like a hat pulled down in an alley.
All right,
in the
scary.
The narrow alleyways.
That's scary.
That'd be Casey Weber.
Hello.
And this town has a governor. This governor allows all of this to happen. Mm-hmm. Everything, it's a chess game. Everything's moving according to the governor's plan.
Mm-hmm.
Has almost a godlike reverie.
Almost.
Almost. No one knows. The town crier's like, I don't know about that. And the governor's like, I do know about that. And the town crier's like, okay.
Okay.
Okay. That would be our governor.
Avian Noble.
If you want no ads, no chit-chat, bonus episodes, just the good stuff, 7 days free. If you want to check in, check out, who cares, or support us a little bit more, we appreciate. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod. You want to get more back into burgers and virgins?
Let's do it. Let's get back. It's 1705, and everyone is still fascinated by Salmaneser's story of being a Formosan and his book, An Historical and Geographical Description of Formosa, an Island Subject to the Emperor of Japan. Now, it's A-N, historical, starting with an H, so it's not grammatically correct. Maybe it was at one point. That's neither here nor there. Innes eventually went to Portugal as a chaplain general to the British forces. And again, he was also doing well at first. But by then, he had a pretty heavy opium addiction and had spent all the money he'd made in several misguided business ventures, including a failed effort to sell decorated fans he claimed to have imported from Formosa. Salmaneser, also a zealous user of opium, made more and more out-there claims and became less and less credible as time went on. Also, knowledge of Formosa from other sources was brought to light. At this point, people were actually traveling there, and the Jesuits who had been there before were being taken much more seriously. The world, due to exploration by European colonizers, was getting smaller. Widespread publication of books was making corroboration of information much, much easier. Generally, London society was getting tired of what was called the Formosan craze. And as they should, for the reasons that I just mentioned. Of course, none of this bode well for Salmaneser, and he saw the writing on the wall. In 1706, Salmaneser and his story had curdled, and he was widely considered a giant national joke, as evidenced by an April Fool's-themed satire published in London's Spectator magazine. The March 16th, 1711 issue announced, quote, "On the 1st of April will be performed at the Playhouse in the Haymarket an opera called De the Cruelty of Atreus. The scene wherein Thyestes eats his own children is to be performed by the famous Mr. Salmaneser, lately arrived from Formosa, the whole supper being set to kettle drums. Salmaneser had had enough of the humiliation and finally confessed, first to friends and then publicly. He said the, quote, facts contained in his book were a mishmash of travel reports, his vague knowledge and misinterpretation of Japanese and Chinese ideologies, and accounts of Aztec and Incan civilizations. In the years after he confessed, I would say came clean, but that doesn't quite feel right due to all the opium. Salmaneser actually did a lot, despite, again, being a huge liar and not being taken seriously. At that point, he was a fraud and a full-on opium addict. But he worked as a clerk in an army regiment until the clergyman there sponsored him to go to school for theology. There, he learned Hebrew, co-authored a book, and contributed to a number of historical manuscripts, one of which was a compilation called A Complete System of Geography, writing about the real conditions in Formosa. In it, Salmaneser pointedly criticized the hoax he himself perpetuated and sustained himself by writing 12 hours each day on a strict diet of 12 drops of opium mixed with a pint of punch. During this time, Salmaneser also cultivated an unlikely friendship with the young writer and critic Samuel Johnson, who founded the Oxford Dictionary. Johnson recalled that Salmaneser had been well known in his neighborhood as an eccentric but saintly figure, quote, whereof he was so well known and esteemed that scarce any person, even children, passed him without showing him signs of respect. That's a shift. Salmaneser also interacted with a number of other important English literary figures at this time, including, as mentioned in the beginning of this episode, Jonathan Swift. In 1753, Salmaneser published his own book of theological essays, and at that point decided to turn his life around. I'm not sure why, but I can't imagine it was an easy life at this point. By 1762, he was a reformed, drug-free, religious man, and published his last will and testament, called, pretty bluntly, The Last Will and Testament of Me, a Poor, Sinful, and Worthless Creature, commonly known by the assumed name of George Salmaneser. In it, he directed that his body should be committed to the common burying ground in the humblest and cheapest manner, and declared that his History of Formosa book, that bestseller from 1704, was, quote, a base and shameful imposture, a fraud on the public. On May 3, 1764, George Salmaneser died, leaving behind a bizarre autobiography called Memoirs, commonly known by the name of George Salmaneser, a reputed native of Formosa, which was published in 1764. In it, he admitted some actual truths about his life, or at least people agree now that they were mostly true, but pretty spun in a classic Salmaneser fashion. His father, he wrote, quote, was of an ancient but decayed family and left his mother and him to fend for themselves. Salmaneser was taught by Franciscans at a free school, by Jesuits at a college, and finally by Dominicans at an unspecified university. In all of these educational institutions, he claimed to have been celebrated by his teachers for what he flagged as, quote, my uncommon genius for languages, calling himself a child prodigy who was fluent in Latin at age 7. At 14, he became a professional tutor, and at 15, he became disenchanted with academia, and was forced to leave for not succumbing to the sexual advances of a mother of one of his students. And then he was off traveling, setting up his elaborate plan to fool his fellow Europeans. As the years went by, others pieced together Salmaneser's actual story, but again, it's hard to know for sure. Many believe he was born in southern France, some guess Languedoc or Provence, sometime between 1679 and 1684. To leave France, Salmaneser first pretended to be an Irish pilgrim on his way to Rome. After learning English, forging a passport, and stealing a pilgrim's cloak and staff from the reliquary of a local church, he set off. But the locals knew Ireland very well, and he fooled nobody with his bad, corny disguise. Deciding that a more exotic identity was needed, Salmaneser found inspiration in Jesuit missionary reports, yes, the very ones who called him out when he came back to London, about East Asia, and decided to impersonate a Japanese convert, then a Taiwanese one, with, as his disguise evolved, lots of strange, made-up customs. Having never reached Rome, Salmaneser trucked through Germany in 1700, 1701, and 1702, and appeared in the Netherlands, where he met Innes, and his fake identity really calcified. I want to note again that even into the 1900s, German grammarians included samples of Salmaneser's Formosan alphabet in books about language. So entrenched was this guy's hold on European culture. And the craziest part, for all his writings, teachings, and admissions, his fame even, The birth name of George Salmaneser, along with the motive to his whole strange Taiwanese hoax, is still and will likely always be unknown.
History is full of bizarre, unsolved mysteries. And over time, these stories have been bent by rumor, warped by social media, and twisted into legend. I'm Michael May, and on A Study of Strange, we dig into these real mysteries and seek the truth, as close as we can get anyway. Recently, we've covered true crime cases like the Greystone Mansion murder, the Red Lipstick Killer, and America's first reported serial killers. Of course, every now and then we also dive into the odd, esoteric, and paranormal, including vanishing people, haunted locations, and UFO history. So if you like your mysteries historical, or if you love a good debunking every now and then, search A Study of Strange wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, the truth is always stranger than fiction.